Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
What up? Welcome in. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be, however you may be making this part of your day, thanks so much. I'm Doug Gottlieb, in for Colin Cowherd. Oh, we are 20 minutes away from Charlie Weiss joining us, four-time Super Bowl champion. We'll get his thoughts on Mac Jones, his thoughts on all these young quarterbacks being integrated into pro offenses and when he would pull the trigger. Charlie Weiss, it's awesome. Now we've gotten a chance to kind of catch our breath, watch Hard Knocks, right? Ruminate over it a little bit. And then you hear the comment from Mike McCarthy, which is, Dak Prescott's like caged animal at practice. So the Cowboys are kind of an amazing case study, right? Like, I think that people want to draw a parallel between Notre Dame football and Dallas Cowboy football. The difference is that while Notre Dame hasn't won a national championship, like, they've actually gotten to the college football playoff. And we can pick apart their schedule and whatever, why, and if they're really at the level of the elite teams. But it does feel like, with the exception of that one terrible season, Brian Kelly's had much greater consistency of success, granted college versus pro. But the point is, these hype teams, the Cowboys, the Dallas Cowboys are an all-time hype team, right? And I think part of it is, you know, that they had the three Super Bowl wins, you know, going back to the 90s. I think part of it is that they've had this kind of history of success. I think part of it is that they just, they're kind of big and bold, and they're that bright, shiny car with the clean rims. And then you start to realize, like, it might actually be a little bit of a clunker. What's amazing about the Cowboys, okay, so if you go back when Jason Garrett first took over, right, 8 wins, 8 wins, 8 wins, 12, 4 wins, of course, that was when Tony Romo got hurt, right? 13 wins. That's when Dak Prescott filled in for, again, Tony Romo getting hurt, ultimately Tony Romo retiring. Since they've had Dak, 13, 9, 7, 8. And then last year, 6, although, as we all know, they had a litany of injuries, not just Dak Prescott, but offensive line, and they had a disaster of a defense. Right, a negative 78 point differential. They hadn't had a negative point differential since 2015, again, when Tony Romo was out. All teams, all of them, okay, if they lose their starting quarterback, they're very, very unlikely to have anywhere near the same level of success. I understand that there's the Giants with Jeff Hostetler, that there's the Eagles with Nick Foles. But the truth is that the Eagles were the best team in the NFC. And then when they got Nick Foles, they kind of stumbled around and just survived. Remember, they should have played New Orleans, if not for a miracle play in which Minnesota wins that. Otherwise, they play New Orleans. Granted, Drew Brees outdoors, but the Saints that year were a better football team than Case Keenum as quarterback of the Vikings. The point is, everybody's always the same when you lose your starting quarterback. But this Dak Prescott's a caged animal. Okay. Has anybody stopped to think, like, you know, I like Dak. He got the new contract. I don't think he's as good as the contract. I think he's a bit overrated. I still think he's a really good quarterback. But even with a healthy Dak Prescott and with what we would all deem, and they've had varying levels of dysfunction. 2 years ago, they didn't beat anybody who was good. 0 wins over a team with an above 500 record. Not one. Last year, the same. 2 years ago, they would get out to a hot start, score in their opening drives of the half and of the second half, and then really struggle when they got off script. Last year, it was kind of the opposite. The defense obviously was a disaster, but even before Dak got hurt, the offense wasn't clicking on all cylinders, and they still had a litany of talented stars. Like everybody thinks CeeDee Lamb's going to be special, and then you look and, oh, sure, Ezekiel Elliott needed to lose weight, and the offensive line needed to be yes, but they still had dudes. And now they're incredibly dependent upon Dak Prescott to carry them. An offensive first team. And the guy who's going to fix their defense is Dan Quinn. Do you remember the last time Dan Quinn was seen as a great defensive mind? I can tell you. He was with the Seattle Seahawks. That Seattle Seahawks team had Cam Chancellor, Earl Thomas, Bobby Wagner, Richard Sherman, and one of the greatest collections of defensive talent. And they did fit into his system. But, like, everybody's a much better coach when you have much better dudes. The point is that when I hear Dak Prescott's a caged animal, one, I'm concerned. I'm concerned about the shoulder. You know? Like, you don't go back in for a second MRI if everything felt right, right? If it was all good news. It's like I say this all the time. Nobody gets a second opinion on good news.
Mr. Gottlieb, I want you to know you don't have cancer.
Well, Doc, that's good news, but I'd really like a second opinion on that. Who does that? Who does that? You know? You go in and take a second look. We're like, yeah, something's not right. He's coming off of a major injury. Like, breaking your ankle in half is a major injury. And when you hurt your shoulder throwing a football, it's, what's it called? The kinetic chain? Is that what it is? Right? The hip, knee bones, the ankle bones connect to the shin bones connect to the knee. It's all interconnected. And when I see a guy who's like, all of a sudden he's got some sort of labrum potential issue, like, you hear the Adam Schefter report, he may not be 100% all year. And now they're fluffing it up with, oh, cage animal, he's unbelievable, the throws are great. I'm not the only one sitting here going like, yeah, I like the Cowboys on paper, but something's wrong. Something's amiss. Cage Lion, sorry, not Cage Lion. Cage Lion. Right. Dak's good. He's not great. He's never been Rodgers. He's never been Mahomes, right? But they have dudes, and they have dudes all over the field. But if he's not right, you know, if he's not, what are they throwing out there? And the more I hear them be so effusive with their praise straight out of a shoulder injury, the more I'm like, I don't buy it. I don't trust it. Doesn't feel right. They are completely dependent upon Dak Prescott to be healthy, to deliver the football, and to score a bunch of points. That's how this team is built. They are built around star power on offense. When the truth is that the offensive line is not nearly as good or as young as its reputation, when the truth is that Dak Prescott and the Cowboys haven't beaten a team with a winning record in 2 years, when the truth is that Dak Prescott's shoulder doesn't seem to be right, could be connected to coming, and the truth is he's coming off of a catastrophic injury. So before we go kind of all in and we find ourselves like, I don't want to, but once again, I believe in the Dallas Cowboys and I, you know, this is, they've had two down years and usually two down years are followed by an up year and the Eagles are bad and you don't believe in the Giants and Washington only has a great front four, but Ryan Fitzpatrick ultimately like, all that's great. But there has to be a hesitance towards the Dallas Cowboys. And the overwhelming praise, the over-dependence upon him to bail them out, the lack of a plan if he's not 100%, and the fact that he's coming off a catastrophic injury and all of a sudden now his shoulder hurts and they get a second MRI, like, I don't know. But I know I'm not going to go after the Dallas Cowboys facility and how they're treated. Like, that's their whole sale is, like, we're the Cowboys. The truth is that these facilities now are obscene. I had a buddy who went to the Vikings facility last week. It was, like, unbelievable. Right? And if great facilities make you soft, then Clemson should be the softest team ever. Alabama, LSU should be super, super soft. They're not. Oklahoma, unbelievable facilities. You're soft because you're soft. If you're a grown man and you don't do the little things and your coach doesn't hold you accountable, well, then that's on the coach and that's on you. All right, coming up next, what would four-time Super Bowl champion coach Charlie Weiss do if he was back with the Patriots in regards to their quarterback situation? Do you take the guy who's got the equity within the league and the equity from last year playing with a bum shoulder and playing through all kinds of contact without a good surrounding sporting cast, or do you play towards the future? Plus, I'm going to ask him about these other young quarterbacks and how he believes they'll fare or when they should fare in the NFL. Charlie Weiss joins us next in The Herd.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Doug Gottlieb in for Colin. This is The Herd. Escape QuickBooks Quicksand with NetSuite by Oracle, the number one financial system. Special financing is back. NetSuite is offering one-of-a-kind financing program only for those ready to switch from QuickBooks to NetSuite today. Head to netsuite.com/herd right now. Charlie Weiss is a four-time Super Bowl champion. Of course, he's also the head coach at Notre Dame, the University of Kansas. He's been all over the National Football League, and he's an absolute savant when it comes to offense and the quarterback position. He's kind enough to spend some time with us here on Fox Sports Radio. Charlie, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing wonderful. How about you, Doug? What's going on?
All good here in Southern California. Wondering, all right, so let's go through the Patriots.
Okay.
Look, Cam struggled last year throwing the football. He had obviously the game against Seattle, which everybody points to. But after that, like, there were some times in which it was painful to watch him throw the football. Now you have to combine it with they didn't have great talent. It's kind of a bridge year last year. So they re-sign him to back up quarterback money and draft Mac Jones. And now here late in the process of the preseason, he misses time due to COVID protocols. What are your thoughts on if you were in that meeting room, how you would approach that if you were a member of the Patriots staff like you had been for so many years?
Well, I've been in that meeting room, you know, when it was me and Bill sitting down when we had to deal with when Bledsoe came back from his injury and Tommy was playing as a second-year player that no one knew anything about. And we had to make a decision whether to put Drew back in there or stick with Tommy. And we stuck with Tommy. So Bill doesn't always take the safest route or the most conventional route. You know, he's not afraid to take what he thinks is the best route. I think in this situation, because Cam has handled himself so well in the building and with the coaching staff and with the players, he's kind of endeared himself. You know, he obviously is going to get put himself in a position to get first crack. Now, crack is also the same word I'll use in what happened here this week. Let's face it, they played on Thursday night. So in all reality, they got some time off after the game was over and watched the tape on Friday. They probably got, you know, a couple days off, and he probably went home. And home is probably North Carolina. I'm not positive. But, you know, it was obviously out of the area. Forget about whether or not he was getting a COVID test or not getting a COVID test. If you're unvaccinated, once you leave the area, you're in the program. So I think that really annoyed, you know, the powers to be in New England. You know, so Mac Jones goes in there yesterday, completes 85% of his passes, and, you know, had a great day. You know, it wasn't as great today, but, you know, it was still a good day. And I think that it's really made the decision a lot tougher, because before this incident with Cam, you know, going into the program for 5 days, it was basically, hey, it's no one beat him out. Cam will be the starter. And when the time's right, we'll play Mac. Now I think the door's open where if they want to go the unconventional route and go ahead and throw Mac in there, Mac has given them every opportunity to say, okay, let's give it a shot.
Doug Gottlieb for Colin. This is The Herd. That's the voice of Charlie Weiss, who's been a part of four Super Bowl champion teams. Yeah, I mean, like, it's you're giving opportunities to another guy, and you're giving coaches a reason. You know, you're saying you don't necessarily want to play without saying you don't necessarily want to play by simply trying to get away or by just not being be vaccinated. I'm like dumbfounded by a guy who had COVID last year. It by all accounts set him back, and had the entire offseason to get vaccinated and chose not to. Whatever your feelings are about it, like this, it's a pretty simple solution to many of these issues.
Hey, Doug, you and I are on the same page there. Hey, we'll play the party line and say, hey, everyone's got the right to, you know, make their own decisions, and that's the world we live in today. But in reality, why somebody wouldn't get vaccinated befuddles me.
Boggles my mind as well. Let's go to San Francisco. Okay, so Jimmy Garoppolo has this wry smile. He seems to know I'm still the guy. A different situation, right? Because Garoppolo, when he's last time he played, he went to a Super Bowl, right? No matter the limitations put on him in the NFC Championship game or some of the flawed throws in the Super Bowl, like, he actually has some equity in the building. They have a Trey Lance who has a world of talent but only played one game last year and hasn't played super high-level football. How would you approach that situation?
Oh, I would definitely play Jimmy first. But my question, though, when I say I would play Jimmy first and when the time's right, get Trey in there. But, almost a question back at you. So whether it's even rhetorical, but when you give all that collateral to go up to that spot in the draft to go get a quarterback, how patient are you going to be waiting to put that person in there?
Not very.
So I think it's the same way. Like, I still think that I'd be modestly surprised if Jimmy isn't the starter. I wouldn't be shocked, but I would definitely be surprised because, you know, you got a team that has a chance to play for a championship. I don't think the team would look at Trey as a polished product at this time. Whereas in New England, I think that the players in New England look at Mac as a polished product. And you remember, they're a victim of circumstance too. Where they, the college they went to. I mean, Trey didn't play last year. You know, Mac was winning the national championship and was arguably the best player in the country. I mean, his receiver wins the Heisman, but arguably the best player in the country, certainly the best quarterback. And, so they really came from a different pattern this year. I think Trey's going to be in there sooner rather than later, but I think Mac's ready to play right now. And I think that's a totally different issue in New England that they're dealing with. Because as you expressed, Cam really hasn't done anything yet. Jimmy was leading in the fourth quarter of a Super Bowl, with the same team 2 years ago. So I think that I'd be very, very, very surprised in San Francisco if Jimmy wasn't the starter, at least start of the year.
Everyone, at least on TV and radio, going back a couple years ago, thought Tua was the can't miss guy, right? But Tua had the hip injury, and he just didn't have a lot of it to him. Like there wasn't that. It's like golf, right? There was the one time you drive a ball and you drive it perfect, it keeps you coming back. There was nothing to kind of keep you coming back, going, yes, Tua's going to be the guy. But now they've given him better wide receivers, an offense that they think he fits in better. And oh yeah, by the way, he's gotten a preseason, not coming off a devastating hip injury. Do you see a difference in Tua this year as opposed to Tua last year?
Well, fortunately, I was down there last Tuesday. We did our training camp show in Miami. And being it's 55 minutes from my house, I drove down there and I did it. So I spent the day with the Dolphins. And the answer to that is you would be sold on you would be convinced that Tua was the answer if you were there with me that day.
Okay.
There was absolutely no indication on or off the field that he is not the man.
Okay. That's on the field as well.
On or off the field. Now, I have a one-day reference, Doug.
Yes.
He was just a stud. And you should hear the players. You talk about somebody glowingly. I mean, when you're interviewing defensive linemen and they're saying, Tua's my guy, I mean, he has the team won. He is the Pied Piper. And, you know, you watch him on the field, did everything. Off the field, everything. Listen to his teammates and his coaches. I mean, this is not a brainwashing message. This is obviously, you know, Miami's playing they're playing the disrespect card. You could tell it. You walked out of the building and say, better look out for this team right now, because everyone wants to talk about the Bills and then the Patriots, and no one's talking about the Dolphins. You know, I'd be shocked if they didn't win double digits this year.
What's reasonable to expect from Joe Burrow? And obviously, you know, Brady went through this. But one of the things people forget about Tom Brady is we were kind of robbed of really the prime of his career, right? Like that, the 18-0 team that loses in the Super Bowl, coming back the next year, and he tears his ACL. And then, of course, there's time that you have to, even the year off, you come back, you're not right. And Burrow, by all accounts, lacks kind of the confidence in that knee and seems to be a little bit shaky, even by his own account. What's a reasonable expectation for when we feel like he should be right?
See, here's the problem that Joe had that Tommy didn't have. When Tommy started playing, we were really stout on defense. So we could play a lot of games very conservatively and not throw them to the walls and have to throw it 40 or 50 times, happen to score 35 or more points in the game. We could win games 21-17 and, you know, 28-24. We could win games like that. But in Cincinnati, for them to win games, they're going to have to score some points. And that's going to put more pressure on him. Look, he's got good skill players around him. You know, the big question is whether or not the offensive line can hold up for him. And that really is the million-dollar question. Because you know what? His knee will feel a lot better if that offensive line is playing really well. You know, because if that offensive line isn't playing very well, I mean, that's a very dangerous proposition.
The Bills have become a consistent playoff team since the coaching staff and Brandon Bean kind of got there. And now they have their guy in a Josh Allen. The addition of Stephon Diggs took their offense to a completely different level. But coming back and doing it year after year now, right? Heavy is the head that wears the crown. Some believe they're a huge threat to a Super Bowl. Where are you on the Buffalo Bills?
I'm high on the Buffalo Bills, but there's one thing that really bothers me about the Buffalo Bills, as good as they are, as good as they were on offense, and that's their inability to run the football. Now, don't you think that everyone this whole offseason, okay, is basically going to sit there and design defenses just to worry about the passing game and not worry about the run about them running the ball? I mean, those guys in this league get paid money to coach defense too. You know, I think that division's going to be pretty rough this year, because even the Jets, I think the Jets will win some games in the division this year, because I don't think there's just going to be a walkover. You know, I expect them to clearly be the fourth best team in the division, but last year, you know, the division kind of fell apart. I mean, the Patriots are under 500. I mean, the Dolphins, you know, they won 10 games. They came close. I mean, the Jets, they were terrible. I think that, you know, the Bills are the favorite, but both the Patriots and the Dolphins are playoff caliber teams, and I think the Jets will be better. So what I'm going back to answer your question on Buffalo is, if you can't run the football or you don't run the football, okay, as good as you are on offense, it's just a matter of time before those defensive guys come up with a way to slow you down.
I look at the Cowboys and I'm intrigued, right? Offensively, they got a lot of weaponry. And in terms of yardage and like when healthy, we've seen a ton from Dak. But he's coming off of a pretty tough injury. Shoulder's bothering him. And the defense has been a mess. And I don't know, year one of completely changing schemes. I don't know how well that goes over. Now, their division's not great, but Washington won it because their defensive front seven is phenomenal. What are you expecting from the Cowboys this year?
You know, although they're the favorites to win the division, I'm not sold on the Cowboys yet either. I mean, probably the best thing that's happened for Dak is those three offensive linemen that were out most of last year are all in the huddle with him. I mean, that's 60% of your offensive line that now you're going back into the huddle and you're looking at these Pro Bowlers with familiar faces that weren't playing last year. You know, of course, he wasn't either. But, I mean, you know, there were a lot of guys, you know, in the tub and not on the field. I think that Dallas, you know, I'm not worried about their offense being able to score points. I mean, I think they'll pass it all over the place and they can run it. You know, like you said, I'm a big fan of Dan Quinn's, and they brought him in to run the defense. And for all, what I understand, what everyone's excited about the most is those young linebackers that they went ahead and drafted and brought in there. But still, I think that Dallas's defense has a ways to go, and I think that makes them very vulnerable because I think teams are still going to be able to score against the Cowboys.
Yeah, and also keep the offense off the field, right? I mean, that's the you keep the offense off the field, and it is your best defense. Charlie Weiss is our guest here. Doug Gottlieb in for Colin. This is The Herd. The Cleveland Browns are a team that, kind of like Tampa, years of being bad and loaded up with talent. And by about midseason, they seem to buy into, you know, to not having Baker try and win games and just run the football and play a little safe. You bring back Odell Beckham Jr., so you do have some star power. Baker's playing for a new contract, but also there's added expectations because last year they made the playoffs. What are your thoughts on the Browns?
I think to the personnel-wise, you know, they're right there with Tampa as the best team in the league. I think Tampa might have the best, but I think Cleveland might have the second best personnel in the league. And I think that Baker seems, you know, I was also high on Baker when Baker came out. Now, you know, there was such disorganization in the organization that, you know, he can be given a little bit of a, you know, free pass too. But I think that Baker has come along as well as the rest of their team. I think it's he's a little cocky, but he's not arrogant. I think that their team is really, really good. Starts with those running backs. The offensive line is solidified last year by bringing a free agent tackle and drafting one in the first round of the draft. I mean, their tight ends are good. Their wide receivers are good. Their quarterback is solid. You know, they needed some extra pass rush, so they went ahead and got some. I mean, I think this is a dangerous team.
You mentioned Tampa and the overall talent. Is there another level to Brady? I understand he's a year older. He didn't have the offseason he wanted because he had to rehab. But it did seem like they figured out kind of a meeting of the minds, whereas early in the year they were doing the Bruce Arians throw it downfield offense. Late in the year to win the Super Bowl, Tom Brady seemed to have a little bit more control over how and what they were doing. Do you think year two brings another level?
Well, I mean, the best part for both Bruce, and I'm not even saying Bruce because he doesn't really run the offense.
Right.
You know, it's Leftwich's offense. You know, Leftwich might talk to Bruce, but, you know, he lets those guys coach. Bruce doesn't, you know, he used to call plays. He doesn't call plays anymore. So I think that they've already gone through their transition, you know, which that's, you know, slowed down the pace last year. But they've gone through that transition, and by they, I don't mean just the coaching staff. I mean Tommy too. You know, for all those years, he was put in the same system that I put in back, you know, in 2000. You know, so It was so long ago that he had the same system for 20 years. The verbiage he'd come in every year. He knew what the huddle was going to be. He knew the formation, the plays, the motion, and how the plays were called and how they're read and how they're designed. Now you're going and, you know, you're, it's like learning a foreign language in a short amount of time. I mean, you can sort of get the base of the foreign language, but to get all the idiosyncrasies and the dialects and everything like that, it takes some time. And I think that as year went on, I thought they got better and better. And I think that there's one wild card player down there in Tampa that isn't quite there yet, but that no one's talking about, and that's O.J. Howard. Because remember, O.J. Howard really didn't play last year.
Sure.
Now, I watched out when my kid was down in Alabama, I watched O.J. Howard run around, and it's scary how fast this kid runs a tight end. He's like one of those guys that you talk about in the front line guys. If they get him back and him healthy, mixing in with those other tight ends, we already know about their wide receivers. I mean, they're good at running back, and then they go get Gio Bernard to be their third down back. I mean, this team should be rocking and rolling on both sides of the ball.
O.J. Howard's one of those teases, right? They would only throw him the ball in the playoff games in college football, but when he gets it, it's electric. Charlie, I hope you're well. Love to talk horse with you.
Yeah, that's right. He had three catches for three touchdowns in the national championship game.
Yeah. Only break glass in case of emergency. Charlie, thanks so much for joining us. Can't wait till football kicks off officially, and we appreciate you being our guest in the Herd.
All right. Take care.
Let's get you to Ryan Music with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herd Line News.
What do you got, Ryan?
Oh, Doug, great football discussion there with you and Charlie Weiss.
Oh, excellent. Rack it.
What do you think about that, Jay Stu?
I'm not familiar with that.
All right. Talk about me. Let's have you talk about how good I was. There we go. What do you got?
Let's pick up that football conversation. And start with this. Congrats to Trevor Lawrence for officially winning this quarterback battle over Gardner Minshew down in Jacksonville, Doug. Urban Meyer finally saying that the number one overall pick from last year's draft will be their starting quarterback. But I think really all eyes are on Urban Meyer right now, as the Jags haven't looked great so far in preseason. And now there's also this from your buddy and NFL reporter from CBS Sports, Pete Prisco, talking about Urban Meyer and how things have gone so far in his NFL career. He's got to change a few things. He brought a bunch of college-like things to the program, which I don't necessarily agree with, and I've heard some players aren't thrilled with him either, including having a microphone on the field. One of his assistants on the field during practice with a boom mic telling everyone to hydrate and hustle and to get ready for the next period. So you're already, after just two disappointing preseason performances, getting very small, light rumblings that maybe the players aren't such a big fan of Urban Meyer's college coach tactics.
Yeah, I think there's half of it is he's got to evolve and understand that pros are just different, man. They're grown men. You don't have to. I remember my third year of playing overseas. I'd actually worked at ESPN, called games, did local radio in Oklahoma City, and then go and play. And I sat with a coach. He was a young guy from the West Indies. He was in his 40s. He just retired. And I was just like, just tell me what you want me to do and when you want me to do it, and tell me what you don't want to do, and then we're good, right? Like, you played enough basketball. I was 26 years old. I don't ever do three-man weave again, I'm good, you know? You don't have to yell at me. Just tell me exactly what you, and if I don't do what you want me to do, fine. There's just a different way of doing things when you get to professional sports. That doesn't mean that the culture building that he wanted to bring in from his time in college, and he has a relationship with a lot of guys that they brought in, either having recruited them or coached them, or somebody in his staff recruited or coached them. But like, look, guys want their independence. Guys want to be grown men. Guys aren't used to being told. You got to tell somebody what to do without telling them what to do. There's an art to it. Do I think he'll get a pass this year? Absolutely. But do I think this can pollute the well a little bit? Yeah, I do. I do. He's got to be smart about it. And I think making Trevor Lawrence earn it when he was the number one overall pick and everybody, like, that was just silliness.
It did. Yeah, it did seem a little over the top to where it really kind of highlights that major difference between, you know, the way you might have run a college program versus the way that you would run an NFL program. But, I mean, to your point that you had brought up previously, like, one of the things that people used to always wonder, like, I mean, Justin Fields, how good could he be? You know, he sat behind Jake Fromm or with Joe Burrow after his, you know, electric career in that one season at LSU. People always wondered, well, why did he always sit and have to transfer away from Ohio State? Like, even in college, which you would think there would be more of an open competition, it's super difficult to sort of unseat that incumbent starter. And so for Urban Meyer to be like, I mean, you know, Gardner Minshew, like, okay, Urban, eye roll, thanks. Speaking of Joe Burrow, there were reports earlier that he was struggling in training camp and by his own admission trying to acclimate to the speed of the NFL after not playing since his season-ending knee injury last year. But now we'll finally see him in real game action, as real as it gets in the preseason, as he makes his debut this week. And Burrow said this was the plan the whole time. We just didn't want to tell you guys. I'm excited to get out there and have a game-type feel. I think it's important going into the last preseason to be as close as you can to having a real game-like feel. I'm going to be in the huddle during the game, and I need to be out there and be able to play in this game.
Yeah, again, every situation is different. And when you haven't played, and I think that, like, the likelihood is the team you're playing against in the last preseason game is not going to play your ones. So if you play your ones, you feel better about his ability to be protected. And I think you want him to play. You want him to feel good. Make a couple of good throws. Step into it. And then get him the hell off the football field. I would guess that's kind of the plan. It's one of those no understanding. It's not just about you. It's about where your quarterback is and the competition. You're not going to go against the best of the best in the final preseason game. And that's Ryan Music with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
The Broncos made a call. Is it the right one? I'll tell you next in The Herd.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Hey, it's me, Rob Parker. Check out my weekly MLB podcast, Inside the Parker, for 22 minutes of piping hot baseball talk featuring the biggest names and newsmakers in the sport. Whether you believe in analytics or the eye test, we've got all the bases covered. New episodes drop every Thursday, so do yourself a favor and listen to Inside the Parker with Rob Parker on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcast.
Doug Gottlieb in for Colin. This is The Herd. Tired of waiting around for hot water? Choose Navien and get instant hot water, spa-like comfort, while you lower your bills. Save hundreds on Navien tankless water heaters with local rebates at tanklessmadesimple.com. So yesterday, the Broncos made a decision at quarterback, right? And Drew Lock, by the way, met with the media, and I thought had a pretty mature way of looking at it earlier today. We'll play that for you momentarily. But again, everything is relative. I get that Teddy Bridgewater wasn't good enough in Carolina. So why, if we're the Broncos, and clearly the Broncos wanted either Aaron Rodgers or Deshaun Watson, and we're going to settle on Teddy Bridgewater, who wasn't good enough for the Carolina Panthers, why? But look, Teddy, the Broncos are talented. They've added tremendous skill position dudes. The defense appears to be back. You got a tremendous defensive coach. And I think that Teddy is steady. And if we're really fair about it, like, did he get a fair shot in Carolina? Fair shot, yes. Got a new contract, got some money, got to start. But Christian McCaffrey played three games last year. He's in the conversation of best all-around offensive player in football. I'm not just talking about fantasy football. Like, that dude's a stud. You only have your best player for three games. You're in rebuild mode. Like, you completely scrapped it and started over. I'm not really sure what the expectations are. But if there's one thing that Teddy can do, manage a game. Now, you're not going to have the spectacular. He doesn't throw it deep down the field. But you go back to when he was in Minnesota the year before he tore his knee up, he managed the game to where they should have beaten the Seattle Seahawks in the playoffs if not for Blair Walsh missing an absolute chip, what, 23-yarder? So I think it's the right call because what you get with Drew Lock is the peaks, but you also get the valleys. You also get the valleys. Here's Drew Lock talking to the media.
You know, it's disappointing. Every feeling that you could possibly have at this point in this day and this just this circumstance, you know, they're running deep. No finger pointing, no negativity. It's going to be about me finding ways to still, you know, make this team great, whether that's, you know, in practice, working with Teddy, trying to find ways for him to get better, whatever he needs me to do. That's pretty much my goal.
That's great. That's what a backup quarterback does. Backup quarterback's all about the starter, right? Understudy is all about the normal lead actor. So, and Drew is a guy who I think he's frustrated the Broncos with some maturity stuff off the field, in preparation, whatever. He obviously has talent. Like, no one's ever questioned his talent. And you can stay ready because Teddy does have some limitations. There is a lower ceiling there. But Teddy being steady might be good enough for this team. I don't think so. I know people want to say the Broncos are a playoff team. I know the Raiders aren't quite there. The Chargers, talent-wise, are. The Chiefs, quite obviously, are. And to have three teams at that high level in that division, and we're not even talking about the Raiders, and I do think that the Raiders are going to have an incredible home field advantage this year. Incredible. Right? Vegas has waited forever for a team. Raider fans, there actually is a Raider nation. I hate how everybody has a nation. You don't have a, but Raider fans, it's like a counterculture kind of element there. In Vegas, the whole thing works. It's going to be perfect. I don't love the Broncos as a playoff team as much as others do, but I get why this was the right call. Super talented roster, both sides of the ball, and Teddy's a just-don't-screw-it-up guy. That's who he is. Mac Jones is taking advantage of Cam Newton, trying to give his job away. I'll tell you how next in The Herd.